Yesterday it was an orientation to the USA from Terry Taylor. Today it will be an orientation to our international work. Now that, right at the beginning, poses a conceptual problem. We navigators use the word international in three different ways. We use it to mean worldwide, as in international headquarters. We use it to mean traveling from one country to another country, when we say that a missionary has an international assignment, like I do being here. And we use it to mean outside America, at least people such as ourselves do, or outside Britain for that matter. So we have a problem. But I am going to use the word international basically to mean worldwide. But I am going to major in what I say on people, events, issues, and so forth that are lying outside the United States, because so much of the rest of the week will be relevant here to the USA. Is this noise troubling you? I have a powerful voice and I could speak without it. Does the hum trouble you? Okay, good. Yesterday morning, in his orientation to the USA, Terry Taylor talked to us about the signs of the times. He talked to us about the need to understand what is going on around us in the world and to respond in a spirit-filled and God-honoring way. He drew out the changing context here in the United States, and he showed that far from being negative, although in many ways the situation is deplorable, for us as Christians, it is a context of hope and of opportunity. The same thing is true outside the USA, only in my opinion, it's more true. By more true, I mean that the speed of change is often faster in other parts of the world, and that the directions of change elsewhere are more violent and more unpredictable. And we could document that. And you read in the news media things that would remind you of that and confirm it in your own heart. So the change is faster and it's more turbulent. For example, in China, which is almost a quarter of the population of the world, the religious situation changes literally almost monthly. Churches are closing in this province. The gospel is being freely proclaimed in this province. A press conference is given by Bishop Ting in Hong Kong, which says one thing. In Peking, the Chinese say another. It is an extreme variety and turbulence. In Africa, there are dozens of countries now which are suffering from very painful and prolonged drought. It's more serious than it's been at any time since about 10 years ago. And there's a political decay all over that continent. In Latin America, the fastest urbanization in the world, 3 of the 5 biggest cities in the whole of the world in the year 2000 will be in Latin America. Mexico City, Sao Paulo, and Buenos Aires. In Northern Europe, we have a cold, post-Christian environment, a secularized environment, but much more secularized than we think we have here. 40% of people go to church in America. 3% of people go to church in London, England. And the percentage who go to church, as we well realize, is not an indicator necessary of spiritual vitality. In the Middle East, the Secretary General of the United Nations in the paper this morning is going there now. He said he was going into a diplomatic vacuum. Not only are things bad there, but they seem always to be on the threshold of tragedy, and no one seems to know what to do about them. All over the world, things are changing, they're violent, and they're turbulent. Now, these conditions, and I want to mirror, because I foundationally believe in it, I want to mirror what Terry said yesterday. We could approach this with gloom, or we could say, this is an opportunity for God to show his glory. Conditions are ripe for gloom or for glory. You can just go either way. We Christians have hope. We are to understand this environment. We are to take it seriously. But we are to regard it as an opportunity for God to work. God, who said in Isaiah 43 that he intended to bring his sons and his daughters from the ends of the earth, people whom he created for his name and for his glory. Not for the navigator's glory, but for God's glory. So God does not dwell on these external conditions that I've described. He knows, he cares, he's numbered the very hairs of our head. But he wants to see us, as his people, move in this situation to use our gifts and to take his love to those who are in such desperate need. And so the ministry of the navigators is a ministry which is particularly suited to the turbulence of modern days. Because we can supply hope. Just one small illustration. In Northern Europe, with which I'm fairly familiar, you've read in Time magazine and so on about the anti-nuclear, anti-American, and sometimes anti-Russian demonstrations. We can introduce people to the Prince of Peace. That's much more important than Salt 1, Salt 2, or Salt 3. The Prince of Peace is our friend, and the people in Europe need, deeply need, and know they need, to feel at peace. So I want to set what I have to say now in that context, and I'm going to switch from that, which is just to expose a little of how I view the world, to give you a handout now, which will go into a specific orientation of what the navigators are and they're trying to do around the world. And I hope that when I say Dave Bristow will appear. Oh, you've got them already. Fantastic. You have your handouts. Thank you, Dave. False alarm. Okay, good. These handouts. You're ahead of me again. You see there the objective number 2 for this week, to provide an international orientation. And I've talked a little bit about the word international. By the way, the purpose of this handout is to allow you to take away more information than you can possibly absorb in the next 30 to 40 minutes. Some of it is very dense, very compact. I will introduce you to it, walk you through it, but I don't expect you to absorb all of it. If later you have questions or observations, phone me, drop me a note, come and see me later in the week, and we can talk more about any of the items that we have listed here. This first page just provides the contents, and let's turn over and walk through this. What we shall do, by the way, is we'll walk through the handout, we'll talk about it, you can take notes on it. By the way, the last page is a page of prayer items, and then the very back of that is available for more spaces for notes if you wish to take notes. Then we'll have some questions, and we'll talk a little bit more about individuals and particular situations around the world that I would like to give you as examples of what is going on. So first of all, this general material, then somewhat shorter, specific material and examples of our ministry. You'll see here on page 2, back of page 1, the promises that were claimed over the years by Dawson and by Lorne. And 4 years ago, we met together as a leadership team at the Glen, and each of us shared the promises that were perhaps the strongest burnt into us over the years. And these are the ones on which there was a consensus. Many of us had different promises, other promises, like you do. But it seems like for many, many navigators, including Dawson Lorne, these 6 promises occupy a special place in what we are trusting God to do. Is it not curious? Is it not peculiar that they are all from the book of Isaiah? There's something to be said about that, but probably now is not the time. I just want you to know that these promises, promises pointing to what Christ can do through us, are some of the deep ones now for Lorne and the people who are privileged to work with him here at the Glen. Okay, by the way, the second promise there, Isaiah 43, that was the particular one that we claimed in this room in 1980 when we had 165 of our leaders from around the world, 21 different nationalities, come here to meet for 3 weeks and to pray together, to plan together. And that was the time in 1980 when God gave us what we call our strategic global imperatives. At least half of you are familiar with these. This is page 3. Please note the purpose of these imperatives, or a purpose, is that we would provide to each country and each ministry not a set of directive objectives, say, do this, do this, do this, but a general consensus that we reached on what are the things that are essential in our ministry. And one can go down these imperatives, as many of you have, and you can underline the key words. For example, in number 1, prayer and the word of God. two foundations built into the wheel. Navigator foundations, Christian foundations indeed. Today is the start in Seoul, South Korea, of the International Prayer Assembly. The Navigators have some representation there. It's not very large, but our commitment to prayer is very large. And then you'll notice in imperatives 2, 3, 4, and 5, these are the ones that Stacy referred to a few minutes ago. And then number 6, the key thing there is the women's ministry. Number 7, the key thing is relating. Numbers 9 and 10 are new. When our International Council met in January, we didn't feel any freedom to remove any of these other imperatives, nor did we want to. But we did feel that God was leading us to add numbers 9 and 10. I'll say a little bit more later about these words, enabling global society, in number 9. And then number 10 is an expression of what we have learned in the last few years about what missiologists call contextualization. We didn't want to use such a heavy technical word here, so we said we want ministries which are biblically based, relevant, and reproducible. And that basically is what is being referred to in the literature as ministries which are contextualized. All things to all men, that by all means we might save some. We move to page 4. Out of these imperatives, there grows first what I have already described to you, that is the opportunity for every country and every navigator, such as you and me, to take some of these, not mechanically every one of the imperatives, but to take some according to the stage of your ministry and join with other navigators in emphasizing those. But a second thing that grows out of the imperatives for us who are either working here at the center at international headquarters or for the regional directors around the world are these global projects. Now, people's attitudes to projects varies. Some think paperwork, endless recommendations which are never put into effect. I will willingly admit that probably for this year, 1984, we have too many projects for the number of people free and available and willing and capable to handle them. We have 9 on this page. But I will also say that our experience, particularly in the last 2 years, is that these projects can be a marvelous way of taking forward our understanding of the signs of the times and our understanding of what our response should be. Nearly all of these projects are handled not by one person, although a sponsor is shown there because someone has to know what's going on and be able to tell Lorne, but by a task force or a group or a committee. And we internationalize these, we mix them. For example, on the matter of contextualization, number 7, although Jim Peterson is the sponsor, one of the most significant things last month was a meeting in Europe of 20 or so Europeans led by Rinus Baljeu, a Dutchman, to try and fathom how we can disciple people in this cold, post-Christian, secularized climate of northern Protestant Europe. I haven't read the report yet. Jim Peterson was there. But here is a group of people coming together under the general rubric or framework of this project number 7. We must learn, as our context changes, what to do about it. Our fundamentals of the ministry, we will maintain. The forms, the shapes, the methods, we will change. So here are these projects. They're all linked on the right-hand side of the page to a particular imperative. And let me just, as an illustration, say a couple of things about number 1, since you see my name there, and it'll give you a feeling of what is really being talked about here behind these words. Global society. I want to take 2 extremes quickly, and then I want to say we should be somewhere in the middle. Extreme number 1, we will be like General Motors, we will have overseas branches, and we will tell people outside America what to do. They will be our subsidiaries. Extreme number 2, we will be like the United Nations. Every country, however tiny, however large, will have 1 vote. Nothing much will happen. People will talk a lot. Money will be spent. Extreme number 2. Now, you can call this, like General Motors, an organization. You can call this a fellowship. Somewhere in the middle is something which we are trying to call experimentally a society, us. We are not shapeless, nor are we dominated, okay, by people who live at the Glen. At least we hope we're not. Okay, now, here, in the middle somewhere, I'm looking for confirmation or disagreement. Well, okay, we British are not going to be dominated. Now, let me just give you a little illustration here. What do we expect from carrying on a project, Bible study, talking to one another, sending a survey to all our leaders around the world, interacting, listening, and so forth? What do we expect? We expect certain things, and I want to read out several of them, that we hope to win through, that God will lead us by the end of this calendar year to more clarity in these areas. We want to have more clarity internationally about what Lorne has often talked about. What is the best balance between an enabling freedom, which we all need in the ministry, and some common sense of direction or even control? We don't want freedom just to do everything that's right in our own eyes, else we can go off and form our own agency. Nor do we want everything to be controlled for lots of reasons, including the fact that people who live here hardly know what's going on in Ghana, West Africa, let alone have any desire to control it. Another thing we want to accomplish is, how should navigator entities, using a neutral word, relate together? We're in 50 countries. One of those countries, the USA, is enormously important to us. 70% of our missionaries, 80% of our money. As Terry said yesterday, it will be for at least 10 years and further, we guess. At least 10 years. Other countries, like Canada, the Netherlands, Australia, are basically run by nationals of that country. They seem to need and should receive some sort of voice, but not just a mechanical vote. What do we do to listen to and understand what those countries want to say to us? How should we provide for that structurally, theologically, practically, and so forth? Another thing we need desperately, since we are 31 nationalities and we minister in 43 languages in the Navigators, just our staff, another thing we desperately need is communications. Not just me talking to you, but you coming and talking back to me, multiplied by 31 nationalities and 43 languages. It is a horrendous challenge. And surely, biblically, unity depends on closeness to Christ. It depends on relationships. It depends on the love that we have one for another. It depends on our growth in Christ, and it depends on a lot of other things, as well as having a structural chart and having some global policies and having an international administrator. A lot more things. And so I'm very excited about this project on a global strategy because it's a very important and deep spiritual quest for us. It's not arising out of problems necessarily, although we've got those all the time, but it's out of the knowledge that we're growing, that the work is changing and the world is changing, and how should we get in step with what God wants us to be and to do. So that is just a little bit of a digression on one of these projects. Page 5. Page 5 has to do with a very simple summary, taking the words, the navigators multiply laborers in every nation. And you'll see there we have three sections. One is about the navigators, one is multiplying laborers, and one is in every nation. I use this page sometimes with interested laymen and laywomen, and so they want to know a little bit about where we are statistically and numerically. And I always tell them, of course, that the navigators is a lot more than our 2,300 staff. But in line with our philosophy of not trying to control everything, that's about all we count. And so you can only communicate what you've got if you know what it is. I hope that sounded sounded adequate. Let me try and say that again. Our philosophy leads us to avoid trying to count, because counting implies control, what many lay men and women are doing, laboring out in the harvest, men and women whose lives we've touched and been a part of. It's right that we should not count that. That, however, puts us in a bind. whenever we want to publicize or give an annual report or stand up here and explain who we are and how we're growing, we find that we talk about our stuff. And so that is a sort of, we exist to serve the movement. We, the organization, exist to serve the movement. So when I say this, that's my qualifier. But I go on to talk about the organization. And you are in the organization too now, so that's okay. The Navigators. We see here we have nearly 2,400 staff, and it's growing at about 8% per year. Like all mission agencies, almost without exception, we count wives, and there are the nationalities of our staff. Point two, 412 of our staff are foreign missionaries, 17%. It's not quite good enough. 10 years ago, that would have been just over 20%. Terry, again, yesterday referred, as regards Americans, to the need to get with it, putting it very simply. He spent about 10 minutes on the point, I think. But to get with it as regards enhancing our missionary program. Same with the non-Americans. We want to get that 17% up again to past 20%. There are reasons why it's gone down, and we understand, and we are set to move. But it's going to take 4 or 5 years to get that sort of shift. And then you can see many of you now already are contact staff, and we have 771 representatives and contact staff, all of whom at least we would expect are equippers. Yes, sir?
And first, how many of these 2377 are non-American?
70% are American, 30% non-American. Yeah, right. Thank you. To multiply laborers, taking the FOM, you remember that the earliest form of laborer is a ministering disciple. And we calculate through some random sampling, because we don't count it internationally, that we raised up, or God helped us to raise up, no, start again, God raised up through us at least some, I got caught on that last time too, I. My theology is okay, but I, anyway, there were 3,000 new ministering disciples, we think, last year. And just over 1,000 of those qualified as disciple makers for the first time. 40% of the new DMs were women, nearly half were non-Americans. I'll refer again to that nearly half in a moment. And then there are dozens of ways, literally, of referring to every nation. We could go with Ralph Winter's people groups, we can go with countries, we can go with languages, we can go with all sorts of things. I just put simply three things down here. Locations. We minister in 760 locations, that is, individual campuses, or separate communities. Bob Hopkins is responsible for all the work of collecting this information, analyzing it, tabulating it, and we have very good records, and the point about records is not to file them, but the way we extract trends from them. For example, the fastest growing section of our ministry worldwide is the community. Church-related, 2-7, other types of mature, adult-related disciple-making ministries is now 36% of the total number of geographic ministries that we have. And then you see here we have all these countries and a lot more that we don't mention. I'll say more about that later. And then number three is quite exciting, very exciting, in fact. Although 70% of all our foreign missionaries are still and will be from some time Americans, there are 17 countries that have sent out at least one Navigator staff member. They've started. They've begun. It's not a stream. We used to say there'll be a stream coming from these countries. No, not for some time. But it is a beginning, and a very encouraging one. This is the Lord's work. Over the page, page six. We'll take a break in a few minutes, so just to stand up. Page six is a single summary of a two-hour presentation that I give to our international council, or that I did give to it last January. Just the potted emphasis of our ministry statistics for 1982-83. And again, hammering home our connection with our primary aim. There it is for the Navigators. Let me just show you a few charts at this stage that relate to what's on page six. It says here our contact staff are up by 7% and our reps up by 6%. We have 753 active Navigators. And you can see on the chart, there's a bar chart. The blue is reps, the green are contact staff, and over the last 5 years, the average growth has been about 6%. fairly steady. The population of the world is growing at 2.8%. When the navigators have a normal age distribution, that is going from 25 to 65, almost 3% of us will retire every year. This is not fast enough. This is by no means fast enough. The urgency of the harvest, the growth of population, and the biological facts about this mission agency all mean that we've got to move faster than that. Okay, the second thing here, the second point is laborers. And the little statement here that there are 1,009 laborers grew by 10%. And what you see here, Terry referred yesterday to the plateau over the last few years in American disciple makers. There it is, the blue line, around about 500 a year. You see the non-Americans or others. By the way, some of us are not too keen on being called non-anything. You might not like to be called non-British. See? So we're others. and then the total, about 1,000 a year on average, new DMs. The result of this, just to elaborate on that, as page 5 has done, in fact, 48% of our new disciple makers are non-Americans. And see the growth here in women? We've heard a lot of concerns about the women's ministry and the navigators. We're too masculine. We don't really understand the biblical teaching on women, et cetera, et cetera. But at the grassroots level, there is a very healthy growth in the proportion of our total ministry, which is women, or with women and by women, largely by women. Okay, and then also here on page 6, a statement about the nations, couched in terms of the number of missionaries sent out. The missionary staff of the navigators at the end of 31 August 83 was 397. Terry spoke to this again. There are two things that this chart shows. We send out a lot of missionaries each year, 60, 70, including wives. But the green numbers grow very little, about 15 a year. Two reasons. One is an okay reason. Many of our missionaries are international trainees. We only send them for 2 or 3 years, so obviously 2 or 3 years later they're a negative comeback statistic. That's fine. The other reason is the one Terry talked about. Far too many of our long-term career-intended missionaries are coming home prematurely. It's less than it was 5 years ago, but it's still too many. And the U.S. Missions Department and some other things we're doing will be working on that. And then the cost of the ministry, it's the first time I've referred to money and probably the last time. Wrong slide. Cost of our ministry, just in terms of gift income, around the world again, $27 million of American dollars of gift income last year, of which approximately $5 million in blue is income from non-Americans and $21 million from Americans. In ordinary dollars, growth of 14 to 15% per year. In real dollars, adjusting for worldwide inflation and other things, gift income was only up by 11%. And then lastly, for us as an American audience, as it shows on page 6, the contribution of the American navigators, just the indispensable engine of our progress, fountainhead of what we have to do as we move towards every nation. The American navigators. Two-thirds of our senior staff, half of our new disciple makers, three-quarters of our missionaries, and nearly 80% of our income. Now, so much for the review of ministry statistics. I'm going to talk a bit about structure now on these pages, and then I'm going to talk a bit about we'll handle the structure, and then we'll take a short stand-up break. So we're now on page 7. If you turn page 7 sideways, you have this curious-looking thing called the structural linkages basic concept. I just want to illustrate very simply, because our structure can be confusing, that it's got a single president, as we all know, but then from there on, it goes two ways. It's like a bipod. One side is the USA. The other side is the rest of the world. The USA is led by Terry Taylor. To personify it, the overseas side by George Sanchez. And what this chart shows is, first of all, it reminds us that at this stage of ministry, about half the new laborers are raised up in the States and half are raised up overseas. So it's very natural that we should have this sort of divergence. But a divergence, unless it's held together, can become a dichotomy. You know, you do the splits. So this chart shows one of the ways, and there are many ways, this is not the most important, but structurally this is the way that we're trying to hold ourselves together. We hold ourselves together, first of all, by having not only a president but an executive director to give a little more oomph at the center in trying to keep this work together and keep it on track. We, just below that in the center, we have myself, and I should really have put there international headquarters, a small service group which helps both Terry Taylor and George Sanchez and Sani and White, and just tries to keep us together in serving and enabling our ministries and administration around the world. And then at the level of the regional directors, such as the U.S. leadership team and the international ministries leadership team, we have this annual council, about 22 people. We meet here for a week and a half every January. And then at the level of the what are now in the States still called the state directors or the country leaders, we had an international leadership conference to hold us together in 1980. And in 1986, we're going to hold a worldwide consultation outside the USA, which we are calling, very unimaginatively, the International Consultation and Conference. I hope we come up with something a little bit more attractive than that. But you'll notice down the bottom of the page in the center, more and more, we are holding ourselves together through special interest groups. All who are interested in the 2-7 will meet here. All who are interested in evangelizing the secularized, like last month in Europe. We will be having, I imagine, consultations in the near future on what should we do as navigators about the super cities. Peterson will have a lot to say about that because he's got 3 out of 5 of the big ones down there and he's done some experimentation. In Asia, in Europe, in the Middle East, not so much here, the issue is what do we do about relating? Should we or should we not plant churches? Can we continue to be so different from all the other Christian groups? Relating. We need a consultation of those who are worried and concerned and full of ideas about that, which the rest of us do not need to attend, however high in the hierarchy that we have, we are. So you see, we used to have hierarchical conferences, now we're going to have interest group conferences much more. So this is our basic concept of our structural linkages. And then over the page, last page before we stop, typical organization chart. Terry told you yesterday, everyone tells you, turn it upside down. That's fine, that's good, that's biblical. But the way it's connected is this. Again, the split. Really, it illustrates the split between the U.S. ministries and the international ministries. International on the left, U.S. on the right. There's a lot of other information on here. Basically, the guy in italics on the left under each country is the leader of that country. And you can look at that and you can say, now, why, oh, why does Asia have all these countries under one man, Doug Sparks, and Australia, which is one country, why does that report to Sanchez direct? Now, the reason is that rather than have a uniform structure, we build our structure around the capacities and experience of the leaders. Doug Sparks is probably our most mature and seasoned overseas American leader. He has a particular heart and has had ever since he went as a missionary to Taiwan for Asia. He has good people backing him up, like Ron York and Warren Myers, very, very mature navigators, so he can handle all those countries, even though it looks such a long list. However, go over to the left, Australia, Canada, Britain, New Zealand, all these four countries, though they are very small compared to the U.S. navigators, have reached a stage where they are essentially established and able, without further outside help, to carry on and multiply the navigator vision. They, we feel at this stage, should have direct access to George Sanchez and hence to the international team without being part of a much larger entity. Also, none of the men, Elliot, Andrews, Broughton, Anderson, have anything like the experience plus capacity of Sparks. So there are reasons for the peculiar variations in the columns on the left-hand side. You'll notice poor Bob Verdano in the Middle East. By the way, what we mean by others is a country which we don't want to put in print. And we all know as staff that we are at least in Egypt, Jordan, and Lebanon, and several other countries which I won't mention, which you probably know about. But all of these countries, Bob decided just a couple of months ago, he does not want to appear in print again. So if you're sending out newsletters or talking to people, don't talk very much at all about our ministries in the Middle East, other than just in general terms. The reason is basically that in Egypt, some of our staff have been asked to leave in the last few weeks, particularly the Finests in Alexandria, and their mail had been open for about 3 months by the local authorities, and they are being harassed, and there's a larger political factor here. Egypt is trying to come back more into the mainstream of the Arab world, and is therefore trying to demonstrate, or at least permit, its adherence to Muslim principles. So a little bit of persecution of Christians of a fairly mild nature is apparently a reasonable thing at this stage. So we catch a little bit of the flack from that. Don't pass that on. Probably I shouldn't have said it, but I wanted to give some background to some of the reasons why, you know, country after country is just listed as others. The Finests, by the way, will be moving probably to Jordan. If you know them, please pray for that. They think they have a teaching opening there, and they will be very good at staff development in Amman, Jordan. So this chart also shows down the bottom right-hand corner the composition of the staff by type of staff, and you see the wives as well there, and the composition by nationality. And over on the right, of course, as Terry probably explained, we don't know who these 6 to 8 directors will be in each of the three divisions. That'll become clear in a few months, but that's about the range that we expect. So there was the page 7 was the basic concept, and page 8 is the way the chart works out at the moment in terms of country leaders. Let's just stand up for a couple of minutes, and then I'll call you to sit down again. Any comments or?
No, it's fine.
Not going too fast?
Mm-hmm.
No.
That's right.
Okay, good.
Coming along very well.
Oh, excuse me.
My name is Gary Little.
Oh, good. Very good, in fact.
I was wondering if we might meet sometime.
Yes, indeed.
You would have
I would like that. I will not be here Thursday, and I will not be here the rest of today. That would leave Wednesday or Friday. You're still functioning on Friday, aren't you? The conference is still on.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I'm free all day tomorrow or Friday.
Tomorrow is a little bit unpredictable for me. Sani and White are back in the office tomorrow. They've both been away 5 weeks, and tomorrow's the first day. So I would not like to get overly committed. Let's set up something fairly early on Friday. How about with structure now, pages 7 and 8? A little bit more on the specifics of the structure at Glen Eyrie. Page 9, I'm now on. You will see from time to time, distressingly frequency, bundles of initials such as IET, INC, IHQ. Most of them have I in front, because remember we use I in at least 3 different ways, international. So lots of initials start with I. But a couple that I want to explain to you in a little more depth, because you don't normally get to hear about them or ask questions about them in your normal ministries, are the executive team and international headquarters. And we have page 9, the purpose and functions of our international executive team. For every committee or team or group at headquarters, we have this way of arranging what is their purpose. If they don't have a purpose, they should destruct. What are their functions? And we review the purpose. Lorne is very scrupulous in this. Every time we meet as an executive team, this piece of paper, page 9, is, after prayer, the first item we look at. Do we agree with this? Do we believe in it? Do we feel we're competent to be this? And then we get on with the agenda. Excellent. Okay. The purpose is to assist the president in leading the navigators. I like the word caring and coordination. We certainly need coordination. You can see that. There are reasons for that, and we need more of it and better of it, but also in a caring manner. And by meeting together and praying together as a team, somehow the spirit of prayer and the spirit of unity gives one a more caring approach than if you just sit behind your desk and say, policy number 7 says so-and-so, therefore no. Okay, now these functions are interesting from one particular point of view, which I want to highlight. If you look at the verbs, people tell you, as I said earlier, the navigators are controlled by dominant people doing dominant things from a center. Look at these rather soft verbs. Evaluate, coordinate, provide impetus, consult, participate. That's not very dominant. And that arises deliberately and intentionally from our biblical concept that leadership is singular. Executive teams shouldn't lead anything. And secondly, that the real leadership of the navigators is those who are leading out in the areas. That is not just a platitude. That is something which, in a reverse way, I want to point out, is mirrored in these functions. We want to help, we want to assist, we want to serve, therefore these verbs are soft. And you will see down in D3, just the one other thing I'll say, the team is intended to expedite our global ministries by exchange of information, and then all these C's, consultation, coordination, cooperation, and commitment. Each time we met last year, Jack Mayhall, who was with us on the team then, would add another C. So I think he'd about exhausted his capabilities to do that. But anyway, I think we do believe in all these three things. We want to consult, coordinate, cooperate, and be committed. So that's the international executive team, and it's Sani and Jerry White, the U.S. director, the overseas director, and then I just pull the whole thing together and the agenda, the minutes, and a lot of the facilitation of the team is my privilege. Over the page, page 10. International headquarters, a small group, approximately 20 of us, Dave Bristow. Not going to work this time. Okay. The purpose of international headquarters is to support Sani and Jerry White and myself as we do a lot of the things listed on the previous page. And you will see, for example, that function number 2, someone needs to provide continuity of operation when the others are traveling. Sani and White get back in town tomorrow from the Philippines. They've both been away 5 weeks. Sanchez has been traveling 7 at least of the last 10 weeks. And so merely from the point of view of opening the mail and deciding, you know, what to do about it, we do need something other than these men. Now, I stress this because people have said, well, we understand why we have a president, but why on earth does he need 15 assistants? Seems a little elaborate. No, it's not really that elaborate when we consider the scope and needs of our work and the amount of travel involved. And then point 3, function 3, we do have this international executive team, which meets at least 4 times a year, and we have our council, which meets once a year. And in items, functions 4 and 5, you can see we are a clearinghouse, a communication center for information and analysis on the worldwide ministries. Now, in the nature of things, this international headquarters, which including Sani and White and their secretaries and so forth and myself, is now 20 persons, in the nature of things, much more of our service and focus is overseas because there is an outstanding, large, and gifted American administration, which you'll know about and are hearing a lot about this week. So we have this bias, if you like, to try and help the younger countries, particularly these countries that I mentioned that we call established. The country leaders of Australia, New Zealand, the Netherlands, Britain, their problems are tiny-scale problems of what the U.S. went through several years ago. Do we need a board of directors? Do we need our own policies? How can we start up a missions program? And they're asking the same questions in many parts of the world, and so we can help bring experience to bear from one part of the world to another or share it ourselves. So international headquarters to support Sani and White and to do the things listed on this page. Okay. So much on our structure. Now, yes, Debbie. Missionary Associates is largely a U.S. program, and therefore Bill Felkeld, who runs the Missionary Associates program, reports to currently, I think, Steve Prenzner. Chef, do you know? It's just switched again, but it's part of the U.S. headquarters. And it will come under, more importantly perhaps for the future, it will come under Jack Mayhall, the Director of Special Ministries, and will be part of that enlarged missions department. Thanks for the question, Debbie. We're going to move off structure now, and we're going to talk about stages of ministry. Page 11. Now, this page, I think, is one of the more meaningful ways to talk about how is the ministry going outside the USA. It's more meaningful than just talking about the number of DMs or the amount of money they raise or how long since they were founded or whatever. And we have arranged all our ministries outside the USA, all our countries, in terms of these four stages. And there is a title, like when we go into a country, it's in the penetrating stage. And we describe that, not with numbers. We don't say in the penetrating stage you must have two converts per semester. We say these other things. We say, typically in the penetrating stage, the language will be studied by the missionaries. There will be cultural orientation. There will obviously be some evangelizing, you see, going on. There'll be some experiments. Maybe we started on the wrong campus. We are entering five new countries this year, and in several of those cases, we'll probably find that we're even in the wrong city. Well, that's happened with fair regularity in the past, and it's not too much to be ashamed of. Because until you get into a country, until you understand the cultural patterns and the bypaths, how can you just look at it and say, right, that city's the right one for me? So the penetrating stage. Then, and the key issue there, you see the key issue? That's the thing to remember, is fruitfulness. You're reaching out to the local people. You're talking to them about the Lord Jesus Christ. And you're looking for response. You're looking for the Holy Spirit to do something. Fruitfulness is the issue. Not laborers, fruitfulness. Then the developing stage. We have a number of countries in the developing stage. And the three E's are all operating in this stage. There are some nationals on the workforce, national laborers, even perhaps national contact staff. But the leaders are still missionaries. We've got a grip of the culture. We think we know what's going on in that country and what works and what doesn't. And the issue now, notice, is are the nationals committed? Where is the ownership? Is it the missionaries' work, which the nationals sort of tag along behind us and smile at us, or are they taking it? That is the issue, commitment. Because we have to multiply laborers, and they've got to do that. And then thirdly, the consolidating stage. They have fully bought into and understood and absorbed, if you like, the FOM. There are national equippers. There are some national staff, legal and materials, and other parts of the body are more in focus. And the issue now is, do they have a strategy? Okay, they're fruitful. Okay, they're committed. But what are they doing? Where are they going? What is God saying to them? The issue is strategy. And then the fourth stage is established. And we have 13 countries around the world which are established. And you just look over the page to page 12, and you can see there a very simple profile of what we mean by an established country. Essentially, brothers and sisters, three things. In a navigator country where the ministry is what we call established, we want, and you see it there in the definition, the ministry must be biblically rooted. Secondly, it must be culturally relevant. And thirdly, it must be continuously effective in terms of our aim. Even if we pulled all the missionaries out, all the visits, all the help, all the everything, that ministry would not only stagger on, but would multiply and continue multiplying spiritual labors. We think, and we're not precise or adamant about this, that we have 12 or 13 countries that would meet this profile. And so you see, this is a development from 10 years ago. 10 years ago when we started to say, what do we want outside North America? We said, well, I think we want 20 converts and 5 disciple makers and 1 staff member per year. And we did that for a few years. We found how different the world was, and some countries went faster and some went slower. This is much more of a concept-oriented definition and is not statistical, and that is intentional. By the way, the word established, which Doug Sparks and I came up with about 6 years ago, does have a couple of difficult connotations. I don't know how you feel about established, but one of the bad connotations is comfortable. You know, we're established now. We're 50 years old. We're the navigators. Rather creditable record in most areas. Be very careful here. The last thing that Jesus Christ, who had nowhere to lay his head, wanted was to arrange for us to be comfortable. And I am seriously thinking, as are others, about whether this word and the things that go with the word, words are powerful, aren't they, is a little dangerous. We don't want to keep saying we've got 12 countries that are established. Well done, those countries. You made it. And one of the things that Alan Andrews, our leader in Canada, is doing is he is saying to these established countries, hey, this is not enough. If you're ever going to contribute as sacrificially as the USA has, you don't just want to be established. You want to be committed to send missionaries. And that's going to take work, effort, and sacrifice. We want these countries, like Canada and Britain and Australia, to have the sort of sacrifice that Dorse had when he went for 40 mornings up on the hill near Los Angeles to pray for the world. The sort of sacrifice that Roy Robertson had when he went to Shanghai in 1948. Now at 63, he's on his way back to Hong Kong to spend the next 10 years training Hong Kong Chinese to go into the mainland. At 63. That sort of sacrifice, which the American navigators over years and years and years have exhibited, often strongly, always to some degree, has got to permeate these other countries. And we've got to be careful not to tell them how established they are too soon. Okay, so I want to say that, you understand that, and pray for these other countries as they grow. Pages 13 and 14 have to do with a concept that I haven't mentioned, but is quite important to us in our planning, and that is the idea of blocks. If you look at the map over here, basically we got one president because we're all committed to one vision, and we got 50 countries out there, each of which has some sort of leader. We got 50 leaders. They can't all report to one man. So what do? We are looking for a way that we can strategize and pray and allocate resources around the world where we don't have to read and make decisions on 50 country plans all at the same time, and yet we don't just think globally. Again, it's a big improvement on 10 years ago. I was in many discussions 10 years ago where the debate was, for example, is Greece more important to the navigators than Bolivia? An almost unanswerable question. So we slid out of that by decentralizing questions like that, mercifully, and by making statements now, not about is Greece more important than Bolivia, but is Latin America more important than Southeast Asia? Now, not important in the sense of who Christ died for, we're all equally important, but important in terms of where we want to put our strokes and our missionaries in the next 5 to 10 years. So we have come up with this concept of a block, and you see there in 1A, a large ethno-religious segment of mankind. Now what that basically means is like a continent, Black Africa, Latin America, Northern Europe, the Protestant area, Southern Europe, the Catholic area, these are blocks, the way we're using the word. And in point two there, you see the 12 blocks with their names and their current leaders. Notice that the Jews, the 12th block, where we don't have a navigator ministry, is not yet assigned. From the way that Terry Taylor is talking sometimes, perhaps he should be the block leader for the Jews as well as for the USA. He certainly has in his heart a marvelous staff development program relating to the Holy Land. But seriously, I think it'll be a few years before we have an active ministry among the Jews. And Romans 10:1 and other verses are on my heart, and others of you, I expect, to when the Lord would cause us to do that. I explain here on the bottom of page 13 there are at least three reasons for the concept of a block. I'm not going to go through them now. You can read through them if you have that degree of interest. Turn over to page 14, which is probably the most ferocious and the most daunting of all the pieces of paper here. But there is something helpful buried in it. Across the top of the page, you see the four stages of ministry. Remember, penetrating, developing, consolidating, established. downwards, you see a list of the countries. So now specifically, you can look for a country that you're interested in or you're supporting missionaries in, navigator missionaries, and you can see where they are in terms of our perception of how they're developing from left to right. Okay? Like with the USA, you see the country over there underestablished. And then in the Commonwealth block, all four countries, they are Canada, Australia, Britain, New Zealand, over on the right, underestablished, meeting that profile. Now, notice under each block title, let's take the block title Latin America, down near the bottom of the page. You see it there? Just to the right of that, it says 8%. That number just means that 8% of the population of the world at this time is in Latin America. So you get a feel of which are the biggest blocks, just a little feel of that. But under Latin America are two italic phrases, very low, very high. The left-hand one describes the priority or the expectation, if you like, that we navigators have for sending outside that block. In other words, we think there is a very low level of Latin Americans that will go in the 1980s outside Latin America as navigator missionaries to other parts of the world. Very low. But for various reasons, on the right of that is very high. There is a very high impetus and desire on our part to send missionaries to Latin America. So Latin America, very low in terms of what we expect to come out from it, in terms of Brazilians and so on going to other parts, very high in terms of what we want to commit to it. And since we, standing here in America, are very interested in our and supportive of the missions program, just notice the very high on the right, the three blocks which are very high in terms of our need to send missionaries to them are Black Africa, you see it there, very high in italics, the right hand, and Southeast Asia and Latin America. And we have decided as an executive team that at least 50% of all American missionaries for the next few years will go either to Black Africa, Southeast Asia, or Latin America. Because we have reasons, not just arbitrary, and we've discussed it with the field leaders, and we have a consensus on this, for saying that those parts of the world are parts where we really want to develop the ministries. They need missionaries, they can accept missionaries, they will use missionaries effectively. All right? Now you take the USA, just finally on this page. For sending, it's very high. Well, obviously it is. 70% of all navigator missionaries. And you'll notice that no other block is even high. The next one is moderate. That is just to symbolize for us the important fact that no other group of countries will send anything like as many as does the USA in the next few years. But under USA, they're very low for receiving. Occasionally they receive someone like Bob Sheffield or myself from Canada or Britain, but the probability of that happening very often is rather remote because of the strength and variety of the U.S. ministries. Okay, so an important page, lots of information on it, and you can gauge going around the world for your prayers where we have reached. Then finally here, this green page, our global prayer requests. This is just a very simple selection of a few. I didn't want to overburden you. By the way, the Australian navigators are coming out with a revised and updated edition of our Global Atlas for Prayer, which will go periodically to all of us who filled in the little cards. Did all of you receive, anyone who did not receive NavWorld a few months ago? Anyone who did not? Aha. I must find out why that is and make sure that you get a copy. In this was a little card that you could fill in and send to Australia asking for that Global Atlas of Prayer, which is going to be available for all our staff. These prayer requests you might want to write following what Terry Taylor said 24 hours ago down on this page somewhere. You might want to write the word revival. That was the theme that came through from what he was talking about. He is looking for revival here in the USA. We are looking for revival around the world. And these prayer requests go along with our global imperatives. Now, so we've moved through this handout. We have talked about a little bit about our strategy, starting with the promises, because our strategy has to be founded on promises, if it's to be God's strategy. Our imperatives. We've talked about where we are statistically at this stage around the world, given some information on that. We've talked about the basic concept of our structure and how we need to keep the two legs, America and the rest of the world, tied together a bit, even though they are separate. We've talked about the executive team here, which is the people that work with Lorne in the leadership of our worldwide NAVs, then stages of ministry for each country, and then the blocks into which we divide the world for the three purposes that I drew attention to on that page. I think probably, rather than produce any more material, I will just for a few minutes see if you have any questions, and then we'll be able to close. But let me just say this. My office is just down the road. My telephone number is as accessible as anyone else's. This is a small sample of a lot of information and analysis which is freely available to our staff. We want you to have it because you can use it. The worst thing is to sit on information and not be in a position to use it. It's so depressing to me. So we want to make a lot more information available, and we want to listen to you too. Okay, some questions or comments or criticisms? Yes?
What would be an example of some reasons why some countries would be very high priority expenditures?
Yep. We're talking here not so much in terms of individual countries, but in terms of these blocks. Let's take Black Africa, where you see that is very high in terms of our desire and intention to send missionaries there. Some of the reasons why Black Africa is so high are the growth rate of the population, which is about the highest in the world. Kenya, the Kenyan population is increasing faster than any other country in the world. I think it's 3.4% per year or something. Scary. Secondly, and more important, the receptivity to the gospel which exists almost throughout Black Africa. It doesn't in North Africa. South Africa is a different issue. But in the 40 countries of Black Africa, almost without exception, there is a receptivity to the gospel. Thirdly, of the 40 countries in Black Africa, at least 25 still accept full-time professional missionaries. You have to exercise a little cunning sometimes to get in, but you're not anathema. Fifthly, Africa is the scene of a very crucial conflict between the Muslim influence coming down from the north and the Christian influence, renaissance of real biblical Christianity in some of the countries in the south. Now, it is said by Dr. Barrett, who wrote the World Christian Encyclopedia and others, that Africa will be the most Christian country in the world by the year 2000. But we have to remember as navigators, many, many, many of these Africans are nominal, superficial, following type Christians. What do they need? To consult a lot of other organizations. But just let me say this. In September, we enter Ivory Coast with a multinational team, Englishman, American, and Kenyan, and a Frenchman, I think. And we have made two survey trips into Ivory Coast in the last year. In each of those survey trips, which I've read the reports of, we have met with leaders of, I'm going to say conservatively, three or four denominations and at least half a dozen mission agencies. And with one exception, and I think there were some personality reasons involved, they've said, come on over and help us. Come on in. That's not to say that if we didn't get a warm, enthusiastic reception, we might not go in. But so far, God has been good in the last few years in giving us that open response from others in the body. So we do take account of that, and we do care about it. Yes?
Do you track any statistics on the effectiveness of the U.S. international ministries as far as affecting the international ministries in the country?
I have never seen any such statistics. You could ask one of the U.S. men, such as Terry. I don't think that we keep them at the moment. The international ministries in the USA are still quite small, as you know, but they're one of the areas that will probably be developed under the new Jack Mayhall Director of Special Ministries job. But people like Nate Mercer, who work in that connection, might have some information, but I don't think we do centrally. Yes?
What would a country like Japan that's listed as established also be one of the most strategic openings for missionaries going through the global trade?
Japan is established. Japan is a country which is curious from a navigator point of view in that it has still a high number of missionary staff as well as half a dozen young Japanese representatives. The request for two more foreign representatives for Japan is a specific one arising out of the situation that has to do with the withdrawal of Bob Boardman, who has now ceased to be the country leader. The Japanese has taken over, Ogawa-san, and the need to make sure that we keep an international presence in that country. Let me put it this way, and I may be misunderstood. Japan is very Japanese. Another country in a similar situation is Korea. Korea has a dynamic navigator ministry. But because of the difficulties of the language, because the Korean culture is so dissimilar to what we Westerners are used to, with the active agreement of the Korean leaders, we want to keep a good missionary presence in Korea. Japan, in some ways, is similar. And there is one other practical reason. The missionary allocation for Japan is for a certain city where we've got a good ministry, and for various reasons I shouldn't go into now, it's just hanging, waiting for someone to take it over and lead it. So it's rather specific. It's not to say that over the next 10 years we want to send one missionary a year into Japan. It's rather specific. Yes?
I'm not sure that I'm talking to the right person, but on the international trainee issue, there seems to be a problem in that when they return to the U.S., there is no report given to their state directors or their regional directors as far as what progress was made and what training they did receive as a, quote, trainee, and what they need to have as a return. Is there any progress being made in this area?
Have you been in IT?
No.
No. You are probably talking to the wrong person. Yes, mercifully. I'm hesitating because certain countries really do an excellent job. I'm thinking of Dave Grissen, for example, in Eastern Europe. I've seen reports that he's written with the full knowledge of the IT that he sent back with the IT, as it were, to the States and said, here are these man's gifts. This is what he's learned or she's learned. Here's how I suggest, and it's only a suggestion, you might be able to use him or her. But clearly that doesn't happen from every supervisor, and probably we at this end would vary in our receptivity or interest. Some of us almost like to start again, you know, and say, well, now we'll really make sure that you know what the ministry is. There's less of that than there used to be.